This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off.
So I live with bipolar disorder, but I have trichotillomania. I pull on my hair. I can't help it. I don't know. I kind of want to say more about it, except that it's like this pesky little thing that I do that makes me look crazy. And I already live with bipolar disorder and I'm pulling out my hair. I mean, I've become a stereotype. So it's a lot to wrap my head around, both the nervous habit or tick or issue. And then when I tell people I have trichotillomania, they're like, you have what, about an hour? So it's, I don't know what to say about it.
When did you first start pulling?
I've done it as long as I can remember. My family, they tried to break me of the habit when I was younger. In my early teens, I remember them yelling at me about it. And, you know, my dad telling me that if I didn't stop it, he was going to force me to get a haircut and I wouldn't be allowed to wear my hair long. And this was, of course, in the 80s when everybody had long hair. And, you know, I was a drummer. I was into rock music. So this was like a real threat. And I really desperately tried to stop. And it caused a lot of fights in my family and it made me really unhappy. And I didn't like any of it, but I just couldn't quit.
What are some of the things that you did to help you try to stop?
Honestly, I didn't know that it was any sort of like illness or repetitive motion. I didn't know that it was tied to a mental health issue. I didn't know that it was any of those things. So I didn't take any action that really would have had any ability to have worked in the early years. All I really did was just try to be mindful of it. And everybody would constantly yell at me, stop pulling your hair, stop doing that, quit it. I made a lot of jokes. I always told people that I had a stick shift brain. Other people's brains were automatic transmissions, but mine was a stick shift. So I had to twirl my hair in order to get it to work. I did try replacing it with other things. Like, you know, I would get a koosh ball. Think of like early fidget toys, you know, back before fidget toys were a thing. But I would try to play with those things instead. Nothing really worked. And I honestly thought it was just more proof that I was weak. I live with bipolar disorder. So I had a lot of depression, anxiety, and you know, the symptoms of bipolar disorder that were also sort of coalescing, for lack of a better word, around this. So I really just thought that I was a freak and that I was weak and that I couldn't control myself. And it just all fed into the despair that was my life.
Yeah, I can remember. I mean, it's like yesterday where I'm just, you know, sitting at the table, hand goes up. And then, of course, I'm startled by a parent, you know, attempting to help, but the help is making me feel horrible. It's like I'm caught doing something so bad and so wrong. And so it was really hard. Even when I tried my best, like you said, I felt just awful. I didn't like when I was called out constantly.
I you know, when you started to tell that story, I was reminded of all the times like somebody would grab my arm and try to pull it away to tell me to stop. And I would react to so startled. I mean, I don't want to say that I was being assaulted. That's not the right word. I don't want the audience to hear that. I never felt like I was in physical danger for more than a second. But what I do want the audience to hear is that for a second, I felt like I was in physical danger. Somebody was grabbing my arm and yanking it away. And it sort of triggers a response in you. Your space is being violated. You're being touched. Now, this is, you know, my mom and my dad and my grandma, and even my first wife did this to me, right? She thought she was being helpful. but it would make me like almost enraged and scared, and it would just it would trigger so much just to be grabbed like that. And it felt very, very, I mean, it felt violent, not for long, but just enough. It was scary.
Yeah, and it's the questions that we would receive. Do you want to look like this? Do you want people to point it out to you or make fun of you at school? You know, I'm coming home from school crying because kids are asking these questions and saying these mean things. And then my supposed safe space is also a place where I feel like I'm under constant surveillance. Granted, like you mentioned, that people are trying to help, but the way that they're trying, it's not actually helpful at all. I'm trying to be at home, and it's like even if I'm in my room, hey, let's make sure the door's open so you know you're not pulling and we can catch you. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, and I do understand that it came from a place of kindness. I guess they, because I did want to stop. They would say to me, "Do you want to stop?" Yes. It's not like I said, "Hey, I want to do this and I'm fine." I didn't want to do it. I wanted to quit. So it's not like they were trying to shame me or be mean. They thought they were being helpful. The problem is that none of us recognized that there was anything else going on. We just thought it was just this bad habit that we needed to break. I remember for a hot minute, I tried to do the thing where you put a rubber band around your wrist, and every time you catch yourself doing it, you pull the rubber band so that you get that like reminder, and it's supposed to make you, I don't even know how the hell that would work. But all I ended up with was a red wrist from constantly snapping it. And I gave that up after a couple of days because it just hurt so bad and it wasn't making anything any better.
I did that too. That was definitely
Yeah.
suggested to me as well. And it's like, I'm looking back, like, maybe not the best option for us at the time. But when did you learn the name for the disorder?
Not until years later. I would be like 30 years old. I got a little lucky. And I know that's weird to say that, I have trichotillomania, but I got lucky. I got lucky because I'm male, because I grew up and I got a job that required a really short haircut. And throughout even the trick, sometimes I would ruin my hair so bad, like it would become so greasy and so damaged that I would shave my head. And when I shaved my head, I couldn't twirl it anymore. So I started to utilize keeping my hair really, really short as a solution to this because it got people off my back. I was really, really worried about, looking bad at work, especially since, now I'm in my early 20s. So I'm starting a job. I'm getting into, like a white collar career field. I'm with other professionals. I'm already young. So I'm already having to prove myself and things like this. So I just started keeping my hair really, really short, and it curbed 98% of the problems. And it was sort of an out of sight, out of mind thing. I really thought, oh, well, I'm no longer doing this because my hair is short. I guess it's okay. And then I didn't really think about it again until I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and I started getting treatment for that. And I started reporting just all kinds of, weird things that I did. Weird being just the only word that I can think of. And I was like, well, I used to yank my hair out. And they're like, what made you stop? And I was like, well, really nothing. If my hair gets too long, I start doing it again. And they're like, really? That's called trichotillomania. And I was like, say what now? And then they explained it to me, and I had no idea.
How did it feel like learning that there's actually a name for this?
I don't know that it felt great. I don't know that it felt really anything. I mean, I'd already learned words like, bipolar disorder and panic attacks and hypersexuality and mania and suicidal depression and inpatient commitment. So I was learning a lot of psychiatric terms in a really short period of time. I saw it as part and parcel of the same thing, and I mean, it sort of was what it was, and I guess I was glad to know that there was something else going on, that I wasn't just weak. But at the same time, it was like, wow, here's just one more thing wrong with me.
And after finding the name of the disorder, did you seek help specifically for trichotillomania? Like, did you ever talk to a therapist about it? And did they give any tips that you actually liked or maybe that have helped?
It's really hard to give tips. I mean, so much doesn't work for me, but I've seen it work for other people. The fidget toys have helped so many people. I want to be honest with the audience, they didn't help me, but so many people have said, "Oh yes, I keep a fidget toy in my pocket, and now I'm not grabbing at my hair." And I'm like, oh, or that's really helpful. But at the same time, I talk to so many people that are like, really, a 99-cent fidget toy is what's going to solve my problem. Thanks. That just seems so infantilizing. So I never know whether I should offer that or not, because I don't know. It seems to either really, really work or really, really fail.
I got advice from someone in the community as I started to become more open about my experience, and they said something great about fidget toys. They were like, well, a fidget toy, it has one home and one job. It's like sometimes I would buy these things and I'm like, I'm going to carry it with me everywhere, and then it like loses its like novelty and it doesn't work anymore. But I did find if I have a fidget toy in a certain spot, like at my desk or something, and I'm only there and using it there, sometimes I have more fun with it. But other times I could do every single tool that I've ever tried in my whole life, and still nothing would work.
Yeah. I not all fidget toys are created equal. I will say that my dog, more helpful. I don't know that I'd call him a fidget toy, but sometimes when I get that like urge to play with hair, my dog is a schnauzer, so he has hair and he's kind of got long hair, and I kind of play with his hair a little bit. It does sort of conjure up some feelings. And the dog likes it. So, and then the dog goes away. So it doesn't ever get to the point where it's like hurting him or me. But it sort of solves that tactile issue. But again, that's another one of those like hints where it's just like, did he say to pull his dog's hair? No, I didn't say that. I just said it sort of conjured up some of those tactile feelings. But I think you got to be really, really careful, because one, you want to make sure that your dog has autonomy, or any animal for that matter. If they want to walk away, you can't be like, no, you have to stay here. You're my solution and my coping mechanism. But at the same time, some of those urges were satiated, by petting my dog. So I don't know where to put that one either, because I can see it going south quickly, but I can also see it sort of helping to take the edge off.
I have an Australian Shepherd. He is like the double coat. So brushing him, like take some of that undercoat out that he just like sheds naturally. So satisfying. Sometimes I'm doing the same thing. If I notice my hands need something to do, I look over and I'm like, would you like to get brushed right now? Make sure it gets some treats and everything. But it is great to have a pet that you can also take care of, but brush and kind of help with that urge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's there's also something to be said about, and I know, again, this is another one of those, playing with your friend's hair, combing their hair, braiding their hair. If you have, children who have long hair and they're okay with braiding it, I think some of these things can be helpful if you're being transparent, and you're being careful, and you're being open. Right. I mean, if you're just like, look, I have to braid your hair right now. You don't understand. I'm in so much pain and anxiety. I must do it. I must, I must, I must. You're probably going to overwhelm somebody and potentially hurt them. But if a couple of times a week you get together and you do hair and you find comfort in it and you like it, and it sort of, satiates some feelings, I don't know that there's real harm in that either. I just don't know. I feel like this is the part of the show where I remind people I'm not a doctor. I'm just somebody who happens to twirl their hair.
Do you ever notice that there are places in your house or in your car, like where you know, hey, I'm gonna be twirling my hair the whole entire time, probably?
Whenever I'm alone, loneliness sort of triggers it. If I'm with people, I tend to do it less. Because I'm like engaged with them. But alone is sort of a sticky wicket, because for example, if I'm in like a huge crowd of people and I'm interacting with them, I'm pretty unlikely to twirl. But if I'm sitting next to my wife or my family, I'm even though I'm with them, I'm not engaged with them, right? We're we live in the same house, or we're sharing the same vacation, or we're sharing the same space. So it's like, yeah, we're not alone, but we're not exactly together. So I sort of feel lonely, or I start thinking, or I start to get inside my own head, and then the next thing you know, I'm yanking on my hair.
Have you had any like large visible bald spots throughout your experience?
In the early days, yes. And that's one of the reasons that I decided to, I would shave my head. And then when I got into the workplace, covering up at school, covering it up with my family, whatever, they were aware of it. They didn't care. They already knew I was odd. But when I joined the workforce, I didn't want to be yanking on my hair and having bald spots. So I started keeping it really, really short then, or even sporting a bald haircut. I know that's kind of funny, to say, but if you're 100% bald, that's a choice. If you have bald patches, you're yanking out your hair and you're crazy. And that's not okay. So I started keeping it really, really short, and I've kept it really, really short ever since to just really avoid that, because I don't want people to look at me like there's something wrong with me, like I'm insane.
And I know typically with people's experience, and I think you hinted on this as well, where there will be times, especially with the hair short, where we aren't really pulling at all. And there's sometimes where it's just so intense, it doesn't matter what is happening. Have you noticed that trend in your own experience, that up and down?
Not really. The urges seem to be pretty consistent. It's like it's ever present. I always find myself like rubbing my head, or just sort of. I don't know. I mean, it really, really high stress maybe. I haven't noticed much of a pattern, honestly. It's just like when it's there, it's there, and it's really invasive and it's really awful, and I can't predict it.
Have you ever pulled out hair from any other part of your body?
Not really. I've tried. I tried to use like chest hair or arm hair, on the theory that I could do that more secretively. But it didn't provide the sensation or the rush that I needed. I really needed like a full clump head of hair. I really needed to be able to, it needed to be long enough to like be able to like, twist and tie into knots and really get like a fistful of and yank. I think especially in the early days, there was almost like a pain that I wanted to go with it. Not like super owie, but definitely I can feel this happening. And I don't know, I don't know really how to describe it. Like I didn't want to bleed, but I didn't want to, I wanted to feel something. And I wonder if in like the depression that was maybe one of the reasons I was doing it, because I just wanted to feel something.
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today. I too tried to pull from other places, and I even started with my eyebrows, but yet now I don't pull them at all. Like it doesn't feel the same, it doesn't feel good anymore. But yeah, I tried like my mustache, my arm hair, my leg hair. And there are people that will pull from there 100%. But for me, there was it like hurt in the way that I didn't want, which it's just, I find it so interesting.
It's tough, right? It's just tough. Swapping out one behavior for another, it's not a bad strategy, right? I mean, I think there's definitely a benefit in, pulling on like, maybe my chest hair when I'm alone in my house and alone, and then yanking on my hair and creating bald spots that people can see when I leave. But at the same time, the core behavior, the core symptom, the core problem hasn't been resolved. It's still there. So it's another one of those, you can swap out the habit with another habit, but what if the cure is worse than the disease? What if the new habit or the underlying issue is then allowed to fester? I worry about things like that.
Think the same thing. I especially because, we typically have these disorders for so long and we're really little kids when we get them. And so it's like, yeah, I always wonder, hey, if I could pick something else, what if that's like way worse? Like I'm kind of comfortable with this now. And I often think about when I used to actually try to bite my nails, because like I didn't know that that was under the same umbrella as a kid. I just saw other kids do it. And I'm like, no one's mean to them. but they're mean to me about what I'm doing. Let me try that. And it never, like, I could never get into it.
It didn't. What there's a word that I'm looking for, and I can't quite like put my finger on it. It doesn't trigger the same response. Like it doesn't feel as good. It doesn't quench that thirst, for lack of a better phrasing. It's not what you want. And for some reason, God knows why, the other thing is.
So, what made you start wanting to share about your mental health and your experiences?
When I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, I really went through a lot of pain and suffering and trauma, and I had a lot of issues, and I really felt very strongly that one of the reasons that I went through all these problems is because there was no education, and because there was a lack of understanding, and because people weren't talking about it. And I was in a position where I could be open about it and still maintain a life and employment. And not everybody is. Some people have to hide because of their family situations or because of their job situations, et cetera. And I was in a position where I could be more vocal. And there was a very, very privileged position, and a very fortunate one. So I started talking about living with bipolar disorder, and about feeling suicidal, and about the mania and the depression and the hypersexuality, and about a lot of the things that happened and the problems that I ran into. And people started listening. I'm not sure why, but they did. And I guess the more they listened, the more I talked, and the more I talked, the more people learned. And I thought it was a good thing, and I started meeting other people, and I started feeling better, and I started feeling like maybe things were moving forward, like maybe we were getting to a better place. And that gave me hope, and hope is a powerful thing as well. So it just all sort of started because I felt that somebody needed to say something, and it really needs to come from people who are most impacted. And I was impacted, so I just opened up about it.
Do you have any emails or comments that really maybe stood out to you that were like, wow, this is why I keep doing what I'm doing?
The emails that I get really mean a lot to me, because they say things like, I thought I was the only one, or I didn't realize that anybody else suffered from this. And as my career has gone on, I've been doing this almost, 15, 20 years now. I was diagnosed 22 years ago, and I've been an advocate on this level for well over a decade. And in the early days, I didn't know anybody else had bipolar disorder. I'd never heard of anybody living well with bipolar disorder. And we're doing a lot better. People know people with bipolar disorder, but now the emails are like, oh my God, I thought I was the only one who hated myself for having bipolar disorder, or I thought I was the only one who thought that the reason that I twirled my hair was to feel something, or I thought I'm the only one that called trichotillomania hair twirling, right? So whenever people find pieces of my story in common, right, they're like, they share that we're connected in this small little way, and they share that it makes them feel better about their journey to know that somebody else is going through it too. It makes them feel less isolated, less alone. That really means a lot to me, because that's something that I didn't have. When I got started, there was no social media. There was no smartphones. I didn't really have this vibrant community of people to talk to. I didn't have any community. I just was all alone with my feelings, and it was difficult to find information. It was difficult to find community, and I just really felt alone. So I got into this because I didn't want people to feel alone. So those are my favorite emails.
What I find to be hilarious in the best way possible is that the way that we met was I was like, "Hey, I have trichotillomania. You probably never heard of it before. Like, I should be a guest on your show." Like emailing you because you have your own podcast, which we'll talk about. But then you're like, "Hey, actually, I do." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh!" Like that was just like the coolest thing because I am so often used to saying like, "Hey, let me explain this thing," and you're like, "No, actually, I have that." I said, "Okay, great. You come on my show."
Yeah, I loved it. Thank you so much for the invitation. I don't talk about trichotillomania very often. I really don't. It's you know, bipolar disorder and mental health is just so incredibly vast. I try to stay on, you know, some of the broader topics, especially on the Inside Bipolar podcast, just because people who are listening, you know, they're looking for broad help with bipolar disorder, and if you get too far into the weeds, you lose the audience. So I've never really been able to talk about trichotillomania too much, and that's why I was really, really happy that a podcast like this one exists, because people who have, you know, body-focused repetitive behaviors, they need an outlet as well. People who have trichotillomania need an outlet as well, and you know, it wasn't being served by my podcast, so I was really, really, really happy to get this opportunity and to know that you're out there making sure that people, you know, with this is not alone. That's a theme. I really, 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 really remember just feeling so empty, so alone, so isolated, so misunderstood. And when that went away, I felt so much better, and I had so much more courage and confidence and hope. And that was really a big part of my recovery. So hats off for what you do. Thank you so much for tackling this topic and for doing a podcast like this.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Who was the first person that you felt really safe with sharing your experience?
Honestly, there was a woman named Lisa, and you know, she's still my best friend to this day, and you know, we have a long history. I've known her for a long time. And she's the one who sort of figured it out. I don't know that I would say that I shared with her as much as she shared with me what she noticed. You know, she noticed that something was wrong. She noticed that I was having, you know, so much depression, and she just noticed that things were not good, that I wasn't thriving, and that I wasn't content, and that I wasn't happy. You know, I started sharing more and more and more with her because she asked the right question, and I don't know. I don't know. I felt good. I felt good to be able to do it, but she's probably the first person I shared with, but it was easy because she kind of already knew.
I love that. And I love that what you mentioned, like asking the right questions. This kind of relates in the sense where when I first started talking to people in the community, they would always ask me the right questions about, like, oh, what do you do with the hair? How do you do this? This. But when I would like seek help from medical professionals, I was always getting asked questions like to better educate them because like they hadn't really heard of it. Whereas, you know, I'm able to share, like, yeah, after I pull it out, I look at it, I rub it across my lips, and the other people are like, me too, me too. But I had never really shared that with a therapist because they never asked. They just didn't know.
You would think it would be a standard question, right? But it's really not. And so many people I talk to are just like, well, nobody knew until I ran into somebody else who also has trichotillomania or also had, you know, these body-focused repetitive behaviors, et cetera. So it's just, it really is surprising to me how much we have to learn from ourselves. And I really wish that we could, you know, get medical personnel and therapists to maybe screen for it better. I'm not sure that's possible. I'm not trying to blame them. I don't think they're negligent in any way. I'm not sure that they're on the lookout for this, and I think maybe they should be.
I agree. And what's really cool is that so many people who are in the BFRB community, because of kind of that lack of education around BFRBs, they're actually going into these fields. Like they're hairdressers, you know, specifically for people with trichotillomania. And then they're therapists and psychiatrists. And so now there's like this wave of all these people that I know. And I'm like, darn, if you were only, you know, 20 years older, you know, I could have been in your office and feeling a little different now.
Yeah, and that's what I want for people. Like I don't want people to have to suffer needlessly. Like they're, you know, unfortunately, when something's going on, right? When something's wrong, when something's abnormal, when something's bothering you, when something's causing you distress, right? You're already not your best self. And that's just life, right? That happens if we get you know, a runny nose. I mean, it's not fantastic. No, nobody who has a sneezing fit or a sore throat or you know, is having their quote unquote best days. But you know, the people with the runny nose, the sore throat, the cough, et cetera, they're also not dealing with these feelings of guilt and shame. And they're also not dealing with uncertainty. You know, most people are like, damn it, my nose is running. It's annoying. They deal with it and they move on. But could you imagine if your nose is running and you didn't understand why it was running? The people around you are constantly giving you quote unquote helpful advice on how to stop it from running. You thought that the runny nose was proof of a moral failing in some way. I mean, so now you've got the problem of the runny nose, the annoyance of the runny nose, and all of this extra stuff. And that just makes it even worse. And I think about that all the time. I don't want that for people.
And you know, there's good sides and bad sides about social media, but I think the coolest thing ever is that you can search up hashtag bipolar, you can search up hashtag trichotillomania. You see real people with these disorders and you're able to relate to them and have them at your fingertips. Whereas, like you said before, same with me. I'm looking around my school, my community, I'm looking around and I'm thinking, am I the only one like this? I know there's a name, but geez, I don't see anybody who looks like me.
And it just makes you feel so alone, you know? And I don't like that. I know it's like a theme. I don't want people to feel alone, especially when, you know, look, the majority of people don't have, you know, trichotillomania. They really don't, but a lot of people do. And it's just, it is common. It's not uncommon. And to feel badly about something that you didn't ask for and you can't control and that you're working on and that you're improving, and then you're just trying to live your life. Like, but you know, just feeling isolated, alone, and hopeless, and ashamed. It's just it's not your fault, and I hate that people feel that way, and I don't want this for people, you know, again, not to you know, not to kiss your butt a little bit, but that's why I'm glad you're doing stuff like this, because people need to see each other and they need to be like, hey, me too, and you know, same, and we can do it. I think that's a much more hopeful and confident position than I'm the only one and I'm broken.
Thank you. Same to you. Same to you. What would you say your trichotillomania has taught you?
I don't know that it's taught me anything, honestly. I think that the trichotillomania is aggravating and annoying. And I have beautiful red hair. I know that I have beautiful red hair because everybody tells me that I have beautiful red hair. And I would love to have a longer haircut. I would love to be able to show off more of my hair because I have to keep it so close. My forehead is gigantic. I would love to be able to like do some sort of hairstyle that makes my hair or my forehead not so gigantic. You know, if anything, it's taught me that, hey, I'm flawed, and that's okay. I can get around it, and I don't even think it's taught me that, to be honest. I'm just kind of you know, hoping to say something intelligent for your show. I think that it's just an inconvenience, and I think it's okay that it's just an inconvenience. You know, not everything was meant to teach me a lesson, I guess. And I think that trichotillomania has taught me that no matter how hard I try, I will never be perfect.
And what would be your advice to people who want to start sharing their story?
Do it. Do it. There will always be people who will criticize you for telling your truth. But there will be other people who you will save them. And I'm not trying to be dramatic. I don't mean you'll save their lives. I mean you'll save them trouble. You'll save them sadness. You'll save them doubt. You'll save them from spiraling. You'll save them from feeling bad about themselves. You'll give them insight and hope and connection and confidence. You'll give them the ability to move forward. And you just don't know which one of us that's gonna be. I just, not every single person with trichotillomania is gonna find Gabe Howard and be inspired. In fact, the vast majority of people won't. And that's why it's super important that there's more than just one person who's vocal about this. We need to find all kinds of people on the hopes that the right person finds the right person at the right time, and it makes a world of difference. So I just say do it. You know, prepare yourself for smarmy comments, prepare yourself for trolls, prepare yourself for haters. There's always going to be somebody that tells you that you're attention seeking and they don't understand why you're doing it. As long as you know that your reasons are pure and that you're taking into account other people's feelings and you're being authentic and honest, you just do it.
Now, I'd love to give you an opportunity to plug the podcast that you host, your book, anything about you. How can people find you?
You can find me at gabehoward.com. My book is Mental Illness as an Asshole and Other Observations, which you can get on Amazon. You can get a signed copy, and I'll throw in free swag if you go over to my website, which again is gabehoward.com. I host a couple of podcasts. I host the Inside Mental Health podcast, which covers a broad range of topics in the mental health field. And I also host the Inside Bipolar podcast, which is obviously geared towards living with and managing bipolar disorder. You can find Inside Mental Health and the Inside Bipolar podcast on your favorite podcast players. But of course, you can find all of this if you go to my website, gabehoward.com. Thank you.